All right, we're beginning here on the top of Chof Chedem and Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, a mevi get, vini chozakein. Person is a shliach to bring a get. The husband that he left behind was someone who was advanced in his years. O chole, or he was sick. Noten la, b'chezkat shu kayam. We don't worry about the fact or the possibility that these individuals are no longer alive. A get lachar mita is not a get. You can't give a divorce once the person has passed away, because the relationship is severed by the death, and therefore you don't need a get. So the get's only applicable, only necessary when they are still alive. But an individual who is carrying such a get, and left the individual, again, advanced in age or sick, we assume that they are still alive. Bat Yisrael hanisua lekohen, if she is a Bat Yisrael that is married to a Kohen, which entitles her to eat truma because of the marriage, balach bala lemidinat hayam, and her husband goes overseas, ochelet b'truma, she's entitled to eat truma, b'chezkat shehu kayam, with the assumption that the husband is still alive. And again, here, when they went overseas, it was not for a short duration, this could be for a long duration, and therefore they're entitled to eat truma with the understanding or the assumption that their husband is still alive. Ha-shuleach chatoto mi-midinat hayam, a person who sends his chatat from overseas, makvim ota b'chezkat shehu kayam. Again, we are makriv the korban with the assumption that the balim, the owners of the korban, are still alive. That's from a twofold standpoint. One is, first of all, if the person is not alive, they no longer need a chatat, because death is the ultimate mechaper, and bringing a chatat, achar mita, has no benefit to the party who sent the chatat. But secondarily, there's also a problem, which is chatat, shemetu balea, is the mita. That a chatat whose owners, or the person who wanted the chatat brought on their behalf, if they pass away, then the chatat, or the din of such a chatat, Alach the Moshe Misinai, is that it's the mita, and you can't put it on the mizbeach. So you have a twofold problem with this chatat. Nevertheless, we assume that the person is still alive. So the Mishnah is telling you three instances where we say that a person is b'chezkat chayim. We assume that a person who's alive, when you last saw them, that you can assume that they're still alive, whenever you are executing on the agency that they gave you, and you don't assume that they died. So now, we have the qualification of this. Amarava, Loshanu Elazakein, Shlo Yigia the Gvurot. That's only true if the person is advanced in age, but hasn't reached Gvurot, from the Pasuk in Tehillim, which is, Im Gvurot Shmonim Shana. So Shmonim Shana would be a threshold by which we no longer have that Chazakah. Vichole, and we're talking about someone who's ill, Shrov cholim lechayim, because most people who fall ill survive the illness, they recover, recuperate from the illness, and therefore, if you are under the age of 80, or a person is just ill, we assume, or the chazakah is that they're still alive. Aval zaken shikia legvurot vigoseis, someone over the age of 80, or someone who is on their deathbed, someone who is vacillating between life and death, they are far along in their illness. There we say Shrov Gosusim Lemita. There where we say most Gosusim end up passing away, lo, then you do not have Cheskat Chaim. So Cheskat Chaim exists only below the age of 80, or in a case where one is ill. If they're over the age of 80, or if they are Gosusim, then we are Choshesh Lemita, and we don't have a Cheskat Chaim anymore. In this case, it's either or. You don't need both. It would be enough to cause a problem. All right, Etve Abaye. And by challenges Rova's understanding, hemeviget v'inichozakein afilu ben me'ashana. Person brings a get, he leaves someone behind, even if they're 100 years old. Noten la b'chezkat shehu kayam, gives it to her with the assumption that he's still alive. So here we're over the age of 80, and yet the Braita says clearly that there's no problem with giving the get. There's still chezkat chayim even over the age of 80. Tiyufta, that is strong refutation of Rova's assumption here that 80 is a threshold in zkena. V by Dema, some suggest, okay, it is reconcilable because came into Iflig. Since he already got that far, we assume that he's going to keep going. That there is a certain normal threshold, the actuarial life of individuals, where we'd assume that most people would pass away or at risk of passing away at a certain age. But if a person beats the actuarial tables, then we assume that they will continue to do so. If they live way past when they should have, then you can assume that they're going to keep on living. Rashi does something interesting over here. Rashi says, "Aval ben shmonim v'achat o yoter ad tishim karov lamutu." From 80 to 90, the individual is at risk of passing away, and you cannot assume that he'll live. Once he crosses 90, then you can assume that he's already outlived the normal actuarial tables, and then you can assume he's alive all the way through 100. Even though the Braita itself says 100, implying that that's when we already make that assumption, the Braita says, afilu ben me'ah, even if he's 100 years old, implying that it's even lower than that age, but even when you reach 100, it'll be that. Rashi creates the threshold at 90. 80 to 90 is a risk period, and then 90 and onwards, you get back your cheskat chayim, because you passed over that period of time when there's a risk that you would pass away. It's interesting. Again, the halacha, I don't know if we would accept Rashi's threshold of 90 versus 80. I think many of the other Rishonim see it as a iflig, means unusual. Then you get the cheskat chayim. Now, so it's interesting. In their time, there were really two major periods of mortality, which is that if you go to cemeteries, even from the 1400s, 1500s, and you look at the tombstones, that the majority of the people found there are 20 and below, and like 70 and over. That if you made it past the age of 20 or 25, there's a high likelihood that you would make it to 70 or 80. Most people didn't make it to the age of 20. So once you got up to a certain age, or once you reached adulthood, there was a higher likelihood. I'm saying that mortality rates were still much higher than they are today, but there is a skew that the higher death rates or mortality rates were under or younger ages. And then you have the other side of it, where you have everybody 60, 70 on the other side, which is an interesting dynamic against the people who survived that long, made it through. So the Gemara solves this problem possibly for Rava's statement. Otherwise, we have a problem, meaning the Braita is a problem for Rava. One note here, which is very interesting about the Mishnah, is what's the problem with giving the get? Meaning that over here, if you assume or there's a risk that the person passed away, why is that problematic? If he gives the get, then mimonafshach, she's okay. Either the person who sent him passed away, and she's free and clear because her husband passed away. Or if he didn't pass away, he gave the get, and she's divorced. So mimonafshach, she's okay. Why would you not give the get, or why would you not make an assumption of cheskat chayim? Because in that case, no matter what, she is freed from the husband, and there's nothing to worry about. The different answers that are given. One answer that's given is that it affects yibum. So here, if she was divorced, there's no yibum. If she's not divorced, then there is yibum. Or the other problem of grusha le kohen, meaning that if she wants to now remarry and marry a kohen, if she's a grusha, she cannot. If she is an almanah, she can marry the kohen. So the Gemara says that there are problems that are precipitated by the difference of how she is freed. And so therefore, we are more reluctant to allow him to give the get because it precipitates other problems that we won't be able to clarify. Because of that, we say don't give the get when we're not sure if the guy's alive, because then we won't know what the status of this woman is. Now, there are reasons to say give the get, and then we'll have to deal with those outcomes or those reasons. But we still have to be very careful, because it can cause other problems if we just assume, give the get, and don't worry about the fact that he hasn't passed away. All right, now, Gemara says, Ramile Abaye l'Rabo. Tznan, we have a Mishnah. Hamivi get, v'nicho zakein, ochole, noten la b'cheskat shukayim. Our Mishnah that says that if he brings a get and left him advanced in age or sick, he gives the get as if the person is still alive. Viri minhu. Is that really the case? This is your get 1 hour before he passes away. She may not partake in truma right away. So Kohen, who's married, Bat Yisrael is married to a Kohen. The Bat Yisrael is entitled to eat truma because of the marriage to her husband. But the husband gives her a get and says the get is effective 1 hour before he passes away. Now we said she's precluded from eating truma immediately because it seems like we're choshesh that he might pass away and then this will be an hour before his death. If that's the case, we are worried about him passing away. He does not have a cheskat chayim. So Malay, truma gitin karamit says, wait, you're asking questions from truma to gitin? Truma efshar, get lo efshar. By truma, if she doesn't eat truma, she still has a possibility of eating chulin. Precluding her from truma is not make it into an impossible or difficult situation. It might make it harder for her, but it still doesn't make it an impossible situation. Saying don't eat truma is okay. We can manage through that. Get, if you say don't give a get, lo efshar. What Rashi says about get lo efshar is that the risk of agunot. And therefore, that risk we do not want to play with. And therefore, we'd much rather have the get be effective and not leave her in this position where she doesn't know what her status is. And therefore, we call it Yevshar, because if we don't assume this Cheskat Kaim, we're going to end up with a problem of this get and not knowing if this woman is divorced. So Gemara says, Rami Truma Atruma. Now, as Tosfos points out, didn't the Gemara know this? It's so clear, our Mishnah talks about Gitin and also talks about Truma. So you just move on to the next case in our Mishnah, and you can ask from Truma to Truma. Tosfos says this is a stylistic way of the Gemara, that even though it knows the question's going to move, and they're going to ask the next question, it still gives an answer, and then moves on to the next question. So even though it is obvious that the Mishnah also speaks about Truma, and the same steer exists within Truma, we still answer the first question, and move on to the next question. So when it says, Prami Truma Truma, Tznan, our Mishnah said, Bat Yisrael Nusa LeKohen, V'alach Ba'ala LeMidinat Hayam, Ochele B'Truma B'Cheskat Shehu Kayam, V'Reminu. So we bring the same Tosefta in our Mishnah, but in our Mishnah, not only talks about a get, also talks about Truma. And here you have a Stira and Truma. Our Mishnah says, we consider him alive, and she can eat Truma. And over here, by the case of a get, Sha'achat Lifnei Mita, we suspect that the possibility that he passed away, and therefore, she's already divorced, and she can't eat Truma. So I'm a Rav Ada, Breder of Yitzchak, Shani Hotom. It's different over there. Because he made her a surah an hour before the death by having the get be effective an hour before his death. What Rav Ada Breid V'Yitzchak is saying, Rashi says over here, Lolom lo chayshin on the mita. V'shani hocha, shasra michayim, shachat kodem mitato. Choshata ikal isfuke b'hai ishata shaditele eser. So we're not really worried about death, we're worried about that hour before the death. And that we suspect. And then Rashi says right away, Vishinuya Dechikahu. That's a very difficult answer to give. And that's exactly what Rav Papa is about to ask. Rashi says the answer is almost a setup that gets you to the next question, which is, the answer says, look, we don't worry about death. We just worry about the hour before death. But in the end, the hour before death is connected to death. And that's what Rav Papa asks right afterwards. Matkivla Rav Papa, Yimimai. Do you made Beresha? How do you know that he's going to die first? Maybe she will die first. And what Rashi says is that's the question he's asking. If you're not worried about Mita, how could you worry about that hour before Mita? Because you have other possibilities. Maybe she predeceases her husband and this never comes to fruition. If you don't worry about Mita, how can you worry about the hour before Mita? That's the way Rashi reads it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says Rav Ada Ba'abba's answer is the following. That the hour before Mita is Michaim, is while he's alive. Even if we assume he's alive, Asra Michaim, she becomes a surah to him while he's still alive. Because the get goes effective 1 hour before death. So what Rav Ada Breid V'Yitzchak's answer is, okay, we won't worry about Mita. But over here in the case of the get 1 hour before Mita, that means that the get goes effective while he's alive. And we will worry about the fact that he's alive. Even if he's alive, there's a possibility that she'll be asur. And then uporich, that's the question that Rav Papa asks, says, maybe she will predecease her husband, and she will never become asurah during the lifetime or while he's alive. So even while he's alive, even if you say it has to do with him being alive, there's still a possibility that it will never go effective. So Rashi and Tosafot read the Gemara slightly differently. Rashi approaching it, saying almost that it's a setup, because he says, we don't worry about death, but here, because he did it an hour before death, then we have to worry about every moment being that point. And Rashi says that's a difficult answer, and Rav Papa is going to challenge that right away, and says, who says that he's going to die? If he's not going to die, there's no hour before death. And that's the question of Rav Papa in essence. Whereas Tosafot says that the answer is a decent answer, which is, even if you assume that he's alive, there's a point in time while he's alive that she will become a surah, which is that hour before death, she becomes a surah. So even if you say it's cheskat chayim, still, while he's alive, she will become a surah. Then Rav Papa challenges that and says, who says that the scenario is that she becomes a surah during his lifetime? There's a possibility she will predecease him, and even while he's alive, she will not become a surah. So therefore, you have the same problem again, which is there should be a chazaka here that there is no mita, or if there's, even if you say he's alive and the Easter is when he's alive, that doesn't mean that she will become a surah while he's alive. Elamar Abaye gives an alternate answer, lokasha. HaRabbi Meir, the lo chayish lemita. HaRabbi Yehuda, the chayish lemita. That the Mishnah and the Braita are authored by two different Tanaim. Rabbi Meir is the author of our Mishnah, who's lo chayish lemita. He does not worry about death. Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Tosefta that says that we are chosheish lemita. Where do their opinions appear? This is what we saw back on the Chav Hei. Halukei achiyayim ben akutim. Omer, shnei lugim shani atid lafrish, harei en shuma. Asara, maser rishon. Tisha, maser sheni. Umechal, veshote miyad. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that when you have this yain kutin, you can do this whole mechanism by which you, in the future, will separate out the truma, the maser rishon, the maser sheni, and you can drink it immediately. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, osrim, say that you can't do it. And if you remember, the conclusion of the Gemara on the top of Chavav Amud Aleph was, Shemi Baka, no, that is the machloka between them. Rabbi Meir is not chushesh, the Shemi Baka, no. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon are chushesh, the Shemi Baka, no. Maybe the flask will burst. So now over here, the Gemara's assumption is, if you believe that you worry about a flask bursting, or something going wrong where you're going to lose the wine and therefore it won't work, that would be kavachomer that you worry about death. Because death is inevitable. And since death is inevitable, then for sure a person will die at some point. Shemei baka node is a chashash that the flask will break. It's not given that a flask will burst. We might worry about it, and even though it's far-fetched, they worry about it. Nevertheless, they do worry about it even though it's not inevitable. That means if they worry about that, they're certainly going to worry about death. And so the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir says, I'm not worrying about the flask bursting, also doesn't worry about death. Rabbi Yehuda says, I do worry about the flask bursting, worries about death. And that will explain the difference between the Mishnah and the Tosefta. Now, Rava Amar, Shema Meit Lo Chashinan, Shema Yamut Chashinan. This is a very, very important distinction. He says that the fact that he died, we do not worry about. Shema Yamut, that he will die, we do worry about. Because inevitably, everybody dies. Shema Yamut, of course, he will die at some point. So in the case of the Tosefta by Truma, he will die at some point, and she will become Asura an hour before that, assuming that she hasn't predeceased her husband. On the other hand, in the case of sending the get from overseas, Shema Mate, we don't worry about people dying in general. So we're not going to assume that the person has died. Now Tosfot over here makes a distinction. Rashi already hints at it. The Shema Yamut Miyad Vadai Chashinan Delomar Ela Chazaka Behochi. The Shema Yamut, the fact that a person may die at any moment, that we are choshesh for. That doesn't change the Cheskat Chaim of the individual. Person's assumed to be alive, but maybe he will die. That we do worry about. So Tosfot over here makes a point within Rabbi Meir Shita and within Rabbi Yehuda Shita about time. Time has an impact over here, which is that depending on the duration, your chashash will be different. And what Tosfot says is, Hashta demidamesh shema meit l'shema yamut. Over here, Abaye says we don't worry about, or we don't distinguish between shema yamut, maybe he will die, and shema meit, maybe he did die. We make no such distinction. Tosfot over here clarifies in the previous amud that when we say that, lo legamri medameh, that's not an absolute comparison, because darabi meir muki matnitin kavatei v'lo chayish l'shema meit. He doesn't worry about maybe he died. Afilu lizman meruba. Even over a long period of time, chayish l'shema yamut lizman meruba. So there are differences in the time frame that you're looking. If you look over a large period of time, shema yamut, everybody believes is a problem. Because inevitably everybody dies. And so shema yamut, we don't worry about it in short periods of time or short spans in time. Over large periods of time, everybody agrees that shema yamut, that maybe the person did die and you have to worry about it. So even here, according to the way that Abaye sets it up, where Rabbi Meir makes no distinction between Shema Yamut and Shema Meit, he says both of them are fine, he still will distinguish in Shema Yamut between whether it's a very long duration or a short duration. A short duration, he sees no difference. Over a long duration, he's going to agree that Shema Yamut, someone will possibly die because that's inevitable. And Tosfot says the same thing with regards to Rabbi Yehuda. Well, Rabbi Yehuda, nami dechayish l'Shema Yamut, La alter, lo chayish l'shema meit the alter. He says, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that we do worry about immediately whether he did die, possibility that he did die, and therefore, Rabbi Yehuda believes you worry about the Kohen here with the Truma, if he's the author of that Braita. But the Shema meit the alter, we don't worry about it, maybe he died right away. then a Eshet Kohen could never eat Truma. As soon as he walks out the door, you'd say, oh, Shema Meit, maybe he's dead. And if he passed away already, then she can't eat Truma anymore. So that gives you this untenable situation then where every time the woman is not seeing her husband, she can't eat Truma. So of course, Rabbi Yehuda, even though he says, L'shema Yamut, we worry about from the one moment he walks out the door, L'shema Meit, the fact that he is passed away already, that we do not worry about. So here you have a distinction in whether Shema Yamut, which is in the future, maybe he will die. The way that Abaye answers that is, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir have different shitot in L'shema Yamut. Rabbi Yehuda believes L'shema Yamut, we start worrying about right away. Like you worry about Shema Yibaka Anot, we worry. And so we worry about death. And that causes, or he's the author of that Tosefta that says from the moment he leaves us, we worry about Mitah, and it's an hour before Mitah, we have to worry about it. On the other hand, our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, who says, don't worry about the Shema Yamut. Maybe he will die. Tosfos makes a clear distinction here that Rabbi Meir, who says, we don't worry about the Shema Yamut and the Shema Meit, and maybe he's already passed away, we don't worry about either of those. Nevertheless, over long durations of time, we will worry about the Shema Yamut, because inevitably everybody will pass away, and you have to have some sort of chashash over a long period of time that a person will pass away. And even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that we worry about the person dying from the moment he leaves the house, or from the moment he says, an hour before my death, the get is effective, he doesn't mean absolutely miyad l'shema meit. We don't say right away he's dead, and the woman has to stop eating truma every time her husband leaves her. Every time her husband's not in front of her, maybe he's dead, then he can't eat truma. We don't worry about it like that. We worry about the shema yamut. He could die in the next moment or the next place, and therefore she can't eat truma if he puts it in place. That stipulation that she's divorced an hour before. But without that stipulation, we're not going to assume that every time he's not in front of us, he's dead already. That we will not worry about. So again, that's a distinction that Abaye makes. Rava comes along and says that all the Tanaim agree in this distinction, which is everybody worries about Shema Yamut. A person might die, therefore we worry about it. The Shema Meit, that he already has passed away, that we do not worry about. So our Mishnah is a case where we're worried about he's already passed away. There we don't worry about that. The Shema Yamut, maybe the person will die in the future, that we do worry about. And in the case where the Kohen gives the get with the stipulation that an hour before death, she's a surah, we'll start worrying about the fact that he might die in the future, and therefore right away, you cannot eat truma. So Amalei Rav Adar Rav Matan L'Rovo, Va'Nod, the case of Nod that you're using as the basis for the Shitot here, Shema Yamutu, that's a case of maybe they will die. The Nod bursting is the similar to a person passing away. And you're telling me that everybody agrees Shema Yamut, Chashinan, that we worry about the fact that maybe the person will pass away. So then what don't you worry about? Maybe the flask will burst. That's the same chashash. Uplige. And we see that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda argue in that case. So Rabbi Yehuda, midiskarto, shiny node, de'efsher masole, the shomer. Now, node is different. Mita, death, you cannot protect from. Shema Yamut is not in the person's hands to determine whether they will or will not die. That will happen. And since it will happen, we worry about Shema Yamut, a person passing away. By the node of the Shema Yibaka node, you can take preventative measures to stop it from bursting. Now, Matki Flav Mesharshia, Arveich Arvotzorich, says what? Your guarantor needs a guarantor? Why is the Shomer any better than the Balim themselves? If the owners can prevent it from bursting, or if we say that when it's with the owners, it will burst, just as likely when it's with the Shomer, it will burst, or it could burst. I mean that the Shomer doesn't change the probabilities of this happening and that the possibility would happen. And therefore, like you're saying, Shema Yamut and Shema Yibaka Anod are completely equivalent. If you worry about death, and then you should be worrying about whether the node bursts, neither of those are completely preventable, right? And neither of those are really totally in your control. Again, in both of them, you could take certain precautions. You could do certain things to stop it. But in the end, it's not in your hands. Either the Shomer can make a mistake and be pusheya, or the thing can burst even if you take all the precautions in the world. Something could go wrong and some accident happens and it bursts. And same thing with Shema Yamut. You can take all the precautions in the world, all the safety precautions and avoid dangers. But in the end, a person might die. And therefore, they're comparable. If they're comparable, then how can you say that everybody believes Shema Yamut Chashinan? That's not true. By Shema Yibaka Anod, we have a machloket. So Elam Arova, Shema Meit Lo Chashinan. Everybody agrees that we don't worry about the fact that the person's passed away already. Shema Yamut, the fact that the person may pass away in the future, Tanai Ehi. That is a Machloket Tanim between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. So Abaye suggests that the entire complex is a Machloket, that Rabbi Yehuda believes Shema Meit, and Shema Yamut are equal, and we worry about both of them. Rabbi Meir believes Shema Yamut and Shema Meit are equal, and we don't worry about either of them. Rava comes along and says, no, look, with regards to Shema Meit, everyone agrees that Shema Meit we don't worry about, and therefore our Mishnah can be authored by everyone. According to Abaye, our Mishnah could only be authored by Rabbi Meir. According to Rava, our Mishnah could be authored by Rabbi Huda or Rabbi Meir, because the Shema Meit, Lo Chashinan, we don't worry about the fact that someone has died. On the other hand, the Braita that we brought, Shema Yamut, in a case where the Kohen says, an hour before my death, you cannot eat Truma, and we worry about that fact, Shema Yamut, maybe he passed away, there, according to Abaye, that's only in the Shita of Rabbi Huda, and now Rava is saying the same thing, that's only in the Shita of Rabbi Huda, because Rabbi Meir says, even in the case of Shema Yamut, we don't worry about it, because he doesn't worry about the Shema Yibaka Hanot, which is the same thing as Shema Yamut. And therefore, Rabbi Meir believes Shema Yamut is never a problem, both according to Rabbi and Rava. And that means that the Tosefta, according to both Rabbi and Rava, can only be authored by Rabbi Yehuda. Right now, Ashaleh Chatato Mibdinat Ayam. Someone who sends his Chatat from overseas. Vaha Be'inan Smicha. Don't you have to do Smicha on your Korban? I mean, you have to place your hands on the Korban. You have to lean on the Korban. There's a requirement of Samach Yadav Arosh Korbano, that you have to put your hands on top of the korban. That will be lacking when you send it through an agent, because the agent is not the balim of the animal. And we have a gzerat hakatuv that it is done by the balim and not by their agent. So that chisaron is a problem here, even if you can overcome the chezkat chayim problem, which is that the person is still alive, and therefore you should bring the chatat. You can't overcome the smicha problem with the distance. He can't do smicha. You say, do smicha beforehand. There's a requirement of shkita, take up the smicha. That the shkita has to be done immediately after the smicha. And therefore, they have to be done in a sequence, in a direct sequence. You can't have a gap in time between the smicha and the shkita. So I have a problem here. So I'm Rabbi Yosef. It's no problem with korban nashim. We're talking about a woman who sent the korban, because we have a gzeret ha-ketuv, b'nei Yisrael somchim, v'im b'not Yisrael somchot. B'nei Yisrael do smicha, b'not Yisrael don't. Women are not chayavot in smicha. Even though the Gemara says that women, if they so choose to, can do smicha, v'avilahem nachat ruach. That's what the Gemara in Kiddushin and other places says, that women can do smicha, even though they're not obligated to do smicha, and despite some of the problems with doing smicha when you're not obligated, nevertheless they can do it, but it's not an obligation. So therefore, if a woman sends a korban from overseas, she has a cheskat chayim, smicha is not a problem, we'll bring her a korban. But Papa Amar b'chatat of. Papa says that we're talking about here a chatat of. A chatat of is something that does not require smicha. Since it doesn't require smicha, you can send the chatat of and not be a problem. Tosfot over here, it goes through a, you can see a large tosfot here. He discusses it in numerous places in Shas, this issue of smicha. Because over here, it seems like the Gemara thinks that smicha is ma'akev. That smicha stops you from being a korban. Yet, in other places in Shas, as Tosfot says here, Afagav de smicha lo ma'akva. Smicha is not one of the activities in a korban that is me'akev the korban. He says that we won't allow you to bring a korban if you can do smicha. And what he suggests, by an arel and a tameh, the Gemara says in other places, an arel and tameh can send their korbanot into the mikdash, and even though they require smicha, we just waive the need for smicha, and we bring their korbanot. So Tosfot says, what's the difference between an arel and tameh that can do this, and a shliach who can't do this? Why is someone overseas not able to do it, and arel and tameh are? Both of them can't do smicha. And we say by the person sending overseas, out of luck, you can't do it. Arel and tameh, go ahead and do it. So Tosafot says that the Chachamim only waived smicha where it was impossible. Where it was impossible to bring the korban with the smicha, and therefore they allowed it. By arel and tameh, they have no choice. In the case of an arel, his brother has passed away because of milah. He will never get a milah because it's too risky for him to get a milah. So now if you preclude him from bringing korbanot, he will never be able to bring a korban. That we won't do. And therefore he's permitted to bring a korban now, even without smicha. Same thing with a tamei. Here we're talking about a tamei who's not tamei because he came into contact with the mate, but tamei because he has some sort of mitzorah, zav, something that comes from him which is not within his control to stop that tumah. Whenever it stops, it will stop, but it could be that he'll be tamei for the remainder of his life. Over there, the Chachamim gave permission for him to send his korban and not do smicha, because if not, he will be precluded from korbanot. Over here, when a person sends his korban from overseas, the Chachamim said, come and bring your korban. If you need the korban to be brought, and we make you do smicha, you'll show up. Instead of sending someone else to do it, do it yourself. And there the Chachamim said, since it's possible that you will do it yourself, we will not allow you to bring the Korban, the Chatchila, without smicha. But that actually creates an interesting situation, which is that generally we have a principle that kol ra'oi lebila, anything that you could mix, ein bila me'akevet bo. Then mixing does not cause a problem for it. This is talking about minachot. In minachot, you're allowed to bring a mincha up to the size of 60 isaron. Why is there a cap of 60 isaron? Because the Gemara says, up to 60 isaron, you can mix the oil and the flour well together. Beyond that point, you can't mix it well. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. If he didn't mix it at all, he brought a korban mincha, he didn't mix it at all, it's not ma'akev. Doesn't stop it from being brought on the mizbeach. So now you're telling me, if it's over 60 and you can't mix it, it can't go on the mizbeach. Bila, mixing is not an equal in the korban. The Gemara makes a distinction and says, if it's possible to mix it, then mixing it is not a problem. If it's impossible to mix it, then mixing is a problem. But that would turn out to be just the opposite of what we are saying here. We're saying by the Arel and Tamei, where it's impossible, we let them do it without the smicha. By the case of overseas, where it's possible for him to come do it, we say, no, you can't do it. So it actually turns out to be the opposite of what normally would be in this case. The Tosafot read actually takes that approach. But Tosafot says here, V'yesh lomar, midirashina b'turat kohanim, v'chi itar azab mizovo, v'lo m'nig'o, shma mina d'tamei mishaleach kurbanotav. He says that we have exeret ha-katuv, that someone who's tamei can send his korbanot. So we have a paradigm that tmeim can send their korban. That means that even when they are precluded from sending smicha, they are permitted to send their korbanot. That means the Torah already gave permission. Even though there's no smicha and you cannot do it at all, the Torah says, go ahead and send your korban. From that, that becomes a paradigm that in places where people can't do smicha, and they can't do it, period, they will not be able to do it, we allow the korban to go through. In cases where you could do the smicha, the chamin seig lachatchila, show up and do the smicha, otherwise we're not going to let the korban go. And that's why the Gemara has to come up with the answers of korban nashim or chatat ov, which I brought ala safek. Ritzicha. We need all three cases in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah gives three examples of what we say cheskat chayim. Gemara says, why do you need all three examples? Because deyash minan get. If you only told me about the case of get, mishum dolo efshar. Because like we said before, if you don't allow this to go through, you're going to cause problems of agunot, and therefore to protect the agunot, we allow it to go through becheskat chayim. Aval truma defshar emalo. By truma, where she could eat chulin, let us say she is a surah in truma. Deyash minan truma. If you only told me truma, the zimnan dolo efshar. There are times where truma is very difficult because truma is significantly cheaper than chulin. And maybe this woman is impoverished. And if she eats truma, she'll be fine. If she has to eat chulin, she won't make it. So sometimes even by truma, it puts her in a very untenable situation. So maybe that's why we permitted it by truma. Aval chatat ha'of, misveka lo lo yo chulin lezara. Misafek, we're not going to bring chulin to the azara because the guy might have passed away. Tzricha, therefore we need it. Over here, Tosfot asks a question that we know about a chatat ha'of. Chatat of is the one chatat that's allowed to be brought ala safek. That whenever a woman is in a difficult position with childbirth and we don't know whether she really is tameya or not tameya, or we have sfekot, anytime someone is tameya and their korban they have to bring is a chatat, we say there that the chatat of comes ala safek. A person's allowed to bring a chatat of a safek. If that's the case, then what's the Gemara worried about here? Leo chulin lazara. Even if you allow them to bring it, you're allowed to bring a chatat of ala safek. And that is the nature of this chatat ov. So what's the Gemara worried about here? Oh, maybe you're bringing chulin lezara, he passed away. So Tosafot over here distinguished them and says, V'yesh lamar, the adam atzmo b'dinu shmei v'yela safek kedei liftor at atzmo. A person can bring a chatat ov when he's uncertain as to whether he needs to bring a chatat. That safek we will allow. Avo halacha l'shliach in levi chulin lezara misafek. If it's a shliach who's sending it on behalf of someone else, we're not going to do that for the benefit of an agent. For the benefit of the actual party, we'll bring a chatat of ala safek. But for the benefit of a shliach, to carry out his agency, we're not going to bring chulin lezara just for his benefit. Kamash v'am, what we do, we say he's b'cheskat chayim, and he's alive. But just because the shliach has to carry out his agency, we're not going to say chatat of, okay, just bring it, no matter what, whether it's right or wrong. If it's for the person themselves, we will overlook it and say, right or wrong, we'll bring the chatat for your benefit. So Tosafot makes that distinction here, to answer that problem, why chatat of, which is bala safek, the Gemara is not willing to have it or entertain it being brought as safek here. Okay, next Mishnah. Shlosha dvarim amar Rabbi Lazar ben Parta, lifnei chachamim. He said these before the chachamim, v'kimu et divarav. And they acknowledged or acquiesced to his position in these three things. Al irshi kifa karkom, a city that was surrounded here by a heavily armed army, or in other words, it's a siege that is being laid to the city. Kokom seems to be the word for the wall that they build in the siege. That's the siege line that they create. That's the Karkum. Valsfinam terefet bayam, or a boat that is in a difficult storm in the ocean or in the sea. Veyotzeli don shein bechazkat chayim. Someone is going out to a case to be adjudicated in a capital crime or a capital punishment case. All of them are assumed to be alive. So even though we have witnesses to the fact that there was siege laid to a city, or we have witnesses to the fact that this boat was in a terrible storm, or we have witnesses to the fact that this individual is being taken to court to have a case tried on capital crimes, we assume the person is still alive in all of these cases. On the other hand, aval ir shekavsha karkum, if the city was already conquered by the siege, meaning that the walls were breached and the siege is successful and they conquered the city, usfina shavda b'yam, or a boat that is lost at sea. Rashi over here says shavda b'yam is that it literally sunk. You saw the boat sink. On the other hand, the Rambam says over here, the Sfina Shavda Bayam is a boat that is at sea, that was in a storm also, but lost its oars and its sails. Meaning that they have no means of directing the boat anymore. And that's what it means, Shavda Bayam, because there it's inevitable that the boat will at some point sink because they have no way to get ashore anymore. They can't control the boat anymore. Vayotze le'areg, someone who already was on death row, the case was already concluded, and he is sentenced to death. In those cases, notim alav chumrei chayim v'chumrei metim. We assume that he's both alive and dead, meaning that we give the chumrot to both cases. What does that mean? Bat Yisrael to Kohen, if it's a Bat Yisrael to a Kohen, if he's alive, she can eat truma. If he passes away, or if he's killed, she cannot eat truma. So over there we say, we assume that he died. In the case, it's a Kohen l'Yisrael, it's a Bat Kohen who Yisrael, who, while she's married to Yisrael, cannot eat truma. But if her husband passes away, she returns to her father's house and can eat truma. Over there, lo tochal b'truma, she doesn't eat truma because we assume that he's still alive. So over there we have a safek, and we assume the worst of both scenarios. We assume that he's alive, where that gives you the more chamur answer. And we assume he's dead, where that gives you the more chamur answer. We give both sides of it. One thing I should note about the Mishnah, probably should have mentioned it before, by Irshi Kufa Karkum, the Gemara and the Yushalmi, and Tosafot and other Rishonim and other places speak about the fact that it depends who's laying siege to the city. Depends if it's an enemy that's laying siege to the city, or it's their own government that's laying siege to the city. Is it a rebellion within their own malchut, within their own kingdom, and now the king is coming to suppress the rebellion? Or is it a case where you have outside enemies coming in and laying siege to the city? The Rishonim come to different conclusions about that. Which one is more problematic? Meaning that if it's an internal rebellion, some say that the king doesn't want to wipe out a city in his own territory. Others say, no, a king in his own territory, people rebel, he's got to teach them a lesson and get rid of them. And then the same thing with the enemy. You could have both sides of that. The enemy is either ruthless because they don't care about the people, or on the other hand, the enemy doesn't have to show anything. They're coming here to conquer. Once they conquer the city, they want the people to pay taxes. They want the people there. It's not an issue. So the Rishonim deal with this Karkom and qualify it based on the Yushami as to whether it's dealing with a karkum of an enemy or karkum of an internal government laying siege to the city. So now Amar of Yosef. Yosef qualifies our mission and says, Lo shanu ela beit din shel Yisrael. That's only true with the Jewish court. Avo be beit din shel de kochavim. By a non-Jewish court, Kevin de gamarle dina le katala, miktal katlile. If they sentence him to death, they will definitely put him to death. So what Rabbi Yosef says here about the Mishnah qualifies is this second part of the Mishnah where it says that a person who's been sentenced to death, we give them chumrei chayim, chumrei metim. We're not sure. They might be alive. They might be dead. The witness just saw that the person was sentenced to death and was going to be taken out to be executed, but doesn't know. He never saw the execution, not sure that the person died. Rabbi Yosef says if that's in a Jewish court system, he can't make the assumption that he's definitely dead. Because we know that a Beit Din is looking for the zchut of the person who was sentenced to the last moment. And they have this whole setup, the Gemara in Sanhedrin describes, where they have someone riding with him on a horse with a white flag. And if Beit Din all of a sudden thinks of something, they stop the procession. They try to figure out if there's something good. If the person himself is going out to be executed, says, I have a zchut, we wait and we send it back to the Beit Din. Meaning that there are abilities to overturn the sentencing to death. In the non-Jewish court system, once they've decided that you're sentenced to death, you are sentenced to death, and there is no other choice, they will be put to death. So that's what Rabbi Yosef says. There's certainty of execution by a non-Jewish court, A Jewish court, there's not certainty of execution. Therefore, our Mishnah, which says there's a safek chayim, safek meitim, that's in a Jewish court. In a non-Jewish court, he's definitely going to be put to death. Amar le Abaye. Abaye comes at it from a different approach. Not the modern day approach where, again, today there are appeals, even in the secular system, so you can't assume that the person after a sentence of death will definitely be put to death. But Abaye says, Beit din shel chachamim, na meit mekabel shochada. They accept bribes. So you could undo this death sentence by bribing the courts and getting him out of the problem. Samar le, it's very interesting. Rabbi Yosef says, they're bribe taking is only at certain points. Kishakle, when do they accept bribes? Mikame dalachtom purse shenmag or shenamag. That's only before. Purse shenamag is a Persian term for the sentencing, which is that they are willing to accept bribery until the sentence is given. Until they determine or they come to the conclusion, they're willing to accept bribery. That's what Rashi says this purse shenmag is or shenamag is. On the other hand, Tosafot brings from the Rabbeinu Chananel, it's Dayan Gadol Shalahem. They're big judge. Once the big guy decides, then it's over. They can accept bribery until the big guy has made his decision. They will accept bribery. Once the big guy's made his decision, they don't take bribery anymore. There's a limit to when you can change the sentence. The Vatar de Mechtam Purse Shenamag or Shenamag, once they've already signed the death sentence, then Lo Shakli, they no longer take bribery. So you have a point in which you're allowed to bribe, but beyond that point, bribery doesn't happen anymore. Seems to me that once they've sentenced the person to death, they're going to carry it out in order to look like they are a proper court system and that they will carry out their word. But before they've signed on it, doesn't look like they are not a proper court system because they'll just come to the conclusion that he's not warranting death. So you can bribe them to come to a different conclusion. But once they've come to a conclusion, you can't bribe them to change the conclusion because they see that as undermining their integrity. Even though their integrity is compromised by bribery, but it looks from an outsider, it looks even worse if they change their sentence versus if they simply are bribed beforehand and then they can conclude whatever they need to conclude. So now, meitave. Kol makom shiamdu shnayim v'yamru me'idim anu et ish ploni shenigmar dino b'beitin shoploni uploni uploni edav harizeh yareg. So here is a case in a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that says, any two edim that show up in a Beit Din and say, listen, this guy here was sentenced to death in another Beit Din, and these were the edim in that Beit Din, the new Beit Din puts him to death. So you see here that once a person is sentenced to death, we assume that the sentence holds. How come we don't worry about over here the fact that maybe the other Beit Din found a schut and they changed their mind? We don't do that. When it says, Dimo Boreach Shaini. Over here, the Mishnah is in a context of a Mishnah beforehand where the guy ran away. He ran away from his death sentence in one court, and now these other two people bring him to this other court saying, listen, he had a death sentence in the other court, he has to be put to death over here. So when it says, Boreach is shiny. Now Boreach can be shiny for two reasons. One is, when he ran away, Beit Din might stop looking for a schut for him. Because the fact that he ran away, Beit Din says that's out of our hands, now we will not look for a schut anymore. Or you could argue, the mere fact that he ran away, he knows that there is no schut out there, and that's why he ran away. So either two of those could be why over there we allow him to be put to death in another Beit Din. We don't worry about the fact that there's a schut. But in a normal case, maybe we would worry about the fact that there is a schut. Tashma, Shama b'Beit Din Shel Yisrael, Sheyomrim, Ish Ploni Meit, Ish Ploni Ne'erag. If you hear an announcement from a Jewish Beit Din that so-and-so died, or so-and-so was put to death, you can marry his wife based on that. So if the Beit Din does their daily announcements about what's going on in the Beit Din, and they say so-and-so was killed today by the Beit Din, so-and-so died. Now, died, Rashi says, is he died in incarceration. They incarcerated him, they couldn't put him to death, went on the mitot Beit Din, but he's deserving of death because of what he did. And there, the Gemara talks about incarceration that leads to death. So here, that's what he says. If he died in incarceration, or they say he was killed, executed by Beit Din, we believe them, and we marry off his wife. So he says, Mikuman tarisin shalovdei kochavim. If you hear it from the way the Rashi translates, that is, the kuman tarasin is the executioner. If you hear it from the executioner of the non-Jews Beit Din, the way that Tosafot reads it is, Shemami Beit Din. Kuman tarisin is the non-Jewish courts. If you hear that, ish ploni mate, ish ploni ne'erag, ayisiyot ishto. You don't marry off his wife, you don't necessarily believe them. So now, according to this, is a problem for Rav Yosef, because my mate, or my ne'erag, doesn't mean that he died, or that he was killed. Ilama mate, mate mamash, v'ne'erag, ne'erag mamash. If you say that he died, he literally died, and Erag, he was executed, then when the non-Jewish executioner or court says that the guy was killed or he died, why wouldn't you marry off his wife based on that information? Because when you have a non-Jew speaking just normally, not in the context of edut, not in the context of a court system where he is testifying, he's believed because he's not testifying. He's simply just telling over information. And in telling over that information, we're going to believe him in telling over that information because he's just talking. He doesn't have any reason to color the case or change something because he's simply just telling you information, not testifying about something. So we should believe him over there. So Elav, so what's the case here, mate? Yotzei Lamut is a case where he was going to die. Nerag Yotzei Lehareg. Or the case of executioner, he's going to be killed. Biktani, and we say there, Beit in Yisrael Yasiu et Ishto. And over there we still say in the Beit in Shel Yisrael that you marry him off. If that's the case, we assume that the Beit in Shel Yisrael carried out what they were supposed to carry out. And that's a problem for Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says by Beit in Shel Yisrael, we worry about the fact that they had a zchut and they reversed the sentencing that they gave. The truth is, and Tosafot points this out, you could ask from the other side as well, by the non-Jewish court. Over here it says by the non-Jewish court, we don't believe them. And we think that maybe they changed their mind about it. And Rav Yosef says over here that you don't change your mind. How come the Gemara doesn't ask about that? So he answers here that you could say that this is a case before the sentencing. So before the sentencing, we saw before that Rav Yosef agrees you can bribe them and they'll change the case. So Gemara says, no. Olam meit mamash, v'nerag mamash. Utramar t'kavetei gabei ovdei chuchavim amaylo. So then why don't you believe him by the ovdei chuchavim? It's mesiach lefi tumal, you should believe him. V'akayim alon t'chol mesiach lefi tumal emnune me'emnei. So the answer is, this is what Fred, you were asking. That's in something that he is not nogea b'davar. It's something that he has no vested interest in this. When he's speaking, he's just telling you over. But a story that has no benefit to him, or doesn't tell you anything about what his job is, or what he was supposed to do. About b'milta the shaykhiba, something that he is relevant to, avde l'achzuke shikrayu. They will say things in order to uphold their quote-unquote lie, or their integrity in a sense. They will lie to make themselves look better. And that basically what Rashi says is, he will say that the guy died or was killed, even though he never witnessed it. Because my court system, when they say they're going to sentence death, they definitely sentence to death. So the guy will come to a conclusion from circumstantial evidence, even though he never saw it. He'll see the guy be taken out to be executed, and he'll say, yeah, he was killed. What do you mean? Did you see him? No, I was just watching. People will say that, or I was thinking more along the lines of what you suggested, which is the guy is the executioner. So the executioner wants to look like he does his job, or that he is the guy who killed everybody, he killed them. I took care of him, he's gone, he's dead. So he will say things, even though it may not be true, because he wants to show that he's a good executioner. I killed this guy, I killed that guy, I took care of this guy. He'll say things even when it's not true. Here, the Gemara assumes he doesn't take bribes after the sentencing, but maybe the court doesn't, but maybe the executioner takes a bribe. But there are reasons for him to lie because he is no geah b'davar here, and therefore he's no longer considered to be a mesiach lifi tumo. Lifi tumo means, like the word tamim, he's someone who is completely uninterested party. He's just talking with no vested interests here. He's just talking about a situation, like he talks about the weather, he's talking about this situation. In that case, that's tamim. This executioner is not a tamim. He has vested interests here, and therefore you can't believe him. That's one way to read Rav Yosef. Ikadamre, there are some say that Amar Rav Yosef, this is the way that he qualified the Mishnah, the exact opposite of what we said before. And so now the Gemara is going to repeat in the exact opposite manner of what we just did, which is, Amar Yosef, lo shanu ela bebeit in shol ovdei kochavim. That's only true in a non-Jewish court system. Avo beit in shol Yisrael, kevin in nofik le'dina le'katola katlilei. Once he's taken out to be put to death, they will definitely carry out the execution. So this is just the opposite. He says, by a non-Jewish court, there it's safek chayim, safek mavet, because we're not sure they really carried out the sentence. By a Jewish court, if they make a decision, they definitely carry it out. Amalei Abayi, Beit Din Shel Yisrael, nami efshar dechazulei schuta. Wait a minute, a Beit Din Shel Yisrael doesn't always, after the sentence, carry out the execution. You have the possibility of a schut coming up. Amar says, ki chazulei schuta, mikamei l'gmar dina. That when they say a schut, that's before they come to a conclusion. Butter Gardina Tulo Chozule Schuta. After the Gemara Din, they will not find a schut for him. What about the Mishnah and Sanhedrin? What about all those cases? They send out flags, put a guy on a horse with them. We do think that it's a schud after Gemar Din. Both Rashi and Tosfot over here say, Klomar lo shchiach. Mikom akom lo shchiach. Tosfot and Rashi say the same thing, which is that is an unusual circumstance. We do it. But the chances are so low that they will find a schud because they're so careful before the Gemar Din that any schud that was there they would have found before the Gemar Din. So there is that remote case that they will find it afterwards, but you can assume that didn't happen because it's such a remote possibility. On the other hand, what it seems here is in the non-Jewish court system, what Rav Yosef says is just because they're taking him out after the death sentence, they're taking him out to execute him, that doesn't mean they'll carry it out. There's always room for bribery. There's always room for getting out of that, or they don't necessarily carry out their sentencing. Right? Says lema misayile. This is what we brought before, which was a question on Rav Yosef. Now will be a support for Rav Yosef, which is koma kom shiam du shnayim v'yomru meidim anu et ish ploni shenig mar dino bebeit din shel ploni uploni uploni edav harzei yehareg. So they just show up in another Beit Din and they say, this guy was sentenced to death and he should be put to death. And we do that. Why don't we worry about the fact that the other Beit Din came up with a schut? That sounds like Rav Yosef. Once they sentence him to death, we don't worry about schut anymore. Where it says, no, dima boreach shiny. You can't bring a proof from there because maybe there the reason we don't believe him anymore, we don't worry about schut, is because he ran away. And for the reason that he ran away, that's why he doesn't have a schut anymore. On the other hand, in a regular case, maybe we would worry about his schut, and that's not a proof to Rav Yosef. Tashma, Shema beBeit Din Shel Yisrael Shomrim Ish Ploni Meit Ish Ploni Ne'erag. So you hear an announcement from the Beit Din that this happened. This guy died, passed away, or this guy was killed. You see what Ishto? Then you can marry off his wife. Mikuman Terisin Shel Ovdei Kuchavim Ish Ploni Meit Ish Ploni Ne'erag. If you have that, oh, you see what Ishto? You cannot believe them. My mate or my Ne'erag. What does it mean that he died or he was killed? Ilar Me Mamash Ne'erag Mamash. They said he literally died. He was literally killed. Then kabatei gabi ovdei chachamim, I lie, I'll see what ishto. Then why don't you believe him by the non-Jews? Because hakaimelon kol mesiach lefi tumo emunei me'em nilei. The guy's not in a court system testifying, then he's believed if he just innocently is saying information. Elalav, mate. What's the case of mate? Yotzei lamut. He was going out to die. Ne'erag is yotzei le'areg. He was going out to be killed. You know, again, the difference being that yotzei lamut means he's going to be incarcerated in order to die. Or the hareg means he's actually going to be executed to be killed, but he's being taken out. Victorian, here it says, but Beit Din Shel Yisrael, you see what he stole. By a Jewish Beit Din, you do marry off his wife. That shows you that we're not choshesh for schult. And that when a Beit Din Shel Yisrael makes a decision, it's done. And they will execute on him. That's what Rav Yosef says. It should be supportive of Rav Yosef again. So where it says, no, the olam mate mamash, v'ne'erag mamash. It's a case where he literally died, or he was executed. To kavatei gabdeo v'chamim amai lo. Then by the way, the non-Jew, is he not believed over there? Don't we have this principle that if he's innocently making a statement, we believe him because he's not testifying? That's only true when he's really innocently saying something. Or he has no vested interest in what he's saying. In the case where he has a vested interest, then we worry about the fact that he is trying to uphold his integrity, he's trying to boast about his job, or about what his courts do, or what he does, and therefore he has a vested interest, and we can't believe him over here that they said that they carried out whatever the sentencing was. So there we can't believe them, even though normally, in case we would believe him, and therefore it's no longer a proof to Rav Yosef. The fact that a Beit Din Shel Yisrael, in that case, is considered to carry it out, and a Beit Din Shel Ovdei Chachamim is not considered to carry it out, it's not similar to our case. It's not our case where they're being taken out to be executed, it's a case where they've already been executed. And therefore, it's not a proof to Rav Yosef, because that's not the same case as our Mishnah. But here you have two Lishonot in Rav Yosef. In one case, we assume that the Jewish court always carries out its sentencing. That is the second version of Rav Yosef. In the first version of Rav Yosef, it's the non-Jewish courts that always carry out their sentencing. And we have those two versions of Rav Yosef qualifying the statement in our Mishnah. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Chavtet Amud Aleph.